This whole section of Malachim Bat Parakimel plays against something that we've seen before. So I'll just do a quick review as far as that goes. Yehoshaphat gets together with Ahav, and Ahav says, I'm going up to fight Damascus, I'm going up to fight Aram, and I want you to know if you're going to go with me. So he says, my horses are your horses, my people are your people, and my chariots are your chariots. So essentially, Yehoshaphat puts himself into a subordinate role against Ahav, which made sense because Ahab was the most powerful ruler of the time. And they went up, they fought, and they asked the prophet, and the prophet was pretty sarcastic and nasty, Micha, to Ahab, and he got thrown into jail and beaten up, and there Ahab died, and Yehoshaphat makes it out by the hair of his chinny chin chin, essentially. And that's essentially what happened in chapter 22. That was the last chapter of Malachim Aleph. We're going to see that this chapter, Gimel, Malachim Bet, is very similar, but to a certain degree a counterpoint to what we saw before. So that being said, let's do a little bit of reading. Most of the three quarters is going to be very simple, and then everything is going to go haywire. So we'll start off with the simple part, and then we'll see whether we could deal with the major issue that shows up at the end, which is the issue of human sacrifice. Always a touchy subject, for whatever reason. Okay, let me find my place. Malachim Bet, chapter 3. V'horam ben Achav malach al Yisrael b'shomron b'shnat shmoneh esrei v'yehoshaphat melech Yehuda v'yimloch shneim esrei shana. So he ruled in the 18th year of Yehoshaphat. Yehoshaphat ruled, I believe, 25 years, if I'm not mistaken. So he still had a good 7 years on him. And he ruled for 12 years. This is what your standard, what's called this is your biographic. The prophet didn't need any prophecy to get this information. He just looked it up in a book. God only needs to speak when the prophet can't get the information himself. Wow, there's a light. One would think that there's a light on the end of the tunnel. Because it says, yeah, he did bad, but it wasn't as bad as his father and his mother. His father being Ahav, and his mother being, of course, Izebel. Vayasar et matzvat ha-baal, he took down the altar to Baal, that Asher Asu Afif, that his father had made in the capital city. Rak b'chatot Yerav ben Nevat, Ashech di Yisrael, davek lo sar mimenu. But he still attached himself to the eagle as a Ahav worship in Beit El. So that's actually pretty good. What's interesting is it says he took down the Baal, but not the Asherah. I think there's a parish that says that's because his mother was still active. Izebel was still good to go. She's going to outlive her son by a few days, we'll see. And apparently she's still powerful enough to keep her own things. But by and large, I wouldn't call it a positive review, but compared to what we've seen, it's been worse. I mean, you certainly get the sense that he's not a complete loss. Now, all of a sudden, we get into a war. Umesha Melech Moav Haya Noked. And there was the king of Moab, his name was Mesha, and that was the stela that I showed you, that stone that I brought in a few weeks ago, where Mesha himself says that he breaks away from the rule of Israel, and that's exactly what we're going to see here. Umesha Melech Moav Haya Noked. He was a shepherd. I don't mean, of course, obviously, wasn't just a shepherd. He was the shepherd, but that means that he made his money on shepherding. Moab made its money on shepherding. Veheshivu Melech Yisrael Mea Elef Karim Umea Elef Elim Tzameh. A Karim is a fat ram, like shows up in Hazinu. Karim Veelim Atudim. And an Elim Tzameh is specifically an Ayal Ayal's not a ram.
Woolly ram.
A woolly ram, right. Which means it's a ram that is bred specifically for its fine wool. Like Shemen Zayed is specifically, I'm sorry, a Zayt Shemen is specifically an olive that is bred for its juiciness. There are other olives. There are olives which are used for pickling and other olives. But a Zayt Shemen specifically means a Zayet which is used for its plumpness. Here, too, these are sheep which specifically are grown because of their high-quality wool. Like a cashmere type of thing. Mm-hmm. Something bothers you about that?
Yeah, I thought I remembered when we were in Gedi that there were Ayalim wandering around there, and they weren't furry.
I think that these are something like, I don't know if there are such things. I know there's long-haired steer. What was that? Long-haired
goat.
So I think that's what you're dealing with here. And of course they're on the other side of the Jordan River. That's simply the impression. Whether they could, I mean, they weren't dumb. They knew how to breed animals back from Yaakov's time.
Yeah.
So it could be that they bred these specifically for long hair. Okay. So, but you know what's interesting, by the way, is the amount of money. I mean, that's a humongous. This is, of course, your debt as a vassal state. This is your taxes. It strikes me as a humongous tax. Essentially, you're talking about 200,000 animals a year. That's a humongous tax. You have to be really subordinate to be wanting to pay that kind of deal. Vayi chemot achav. So as soon as Achav died, so what did they do? Vayivsha melech Moab, melech Moab, melech Yisrael. So they said, we've had enough of that. We're not going to pay taxes anymore. Again, the word pasha is really nice, because we say pashati, I sinned, but the original word really means I broke away from my duties and responsibilities.
He
was afraid. Everybody was afraid of Achav. And as soon as Achav died, he said, I'm out of here. Now, Achav's first son was a kind of a loser, to be perfectly honest, named Achaziah, who fell through the floor and killed himself, or who died. The second one, Yehoram, rules 12 years. And we're going to find out that it was a revolution that does him in. Otherwise, he was a reasonable ruler. He was not. He was not without power. That is, he did okay considering the situation. 12 years at this time, when kings are going belly up every year, so 12 years ain't all that bad. What pasuk was that?
What?
So he decides, of course, he decides to put Moab back in their place, and what he does is he calls up Vayifkod means he calls them up for duty, so to speak. He
address.
Thank you very much. So he goes to Melch Yudah. Now here's where the counterpoint starts to play in, because if you remember last time, it was Achav was going to make war up in the Golan Heights and further up in Aram's territory, and Yehoshaphat comes to Achav to the Shomron. Here it's exactly the opposite, which is Vayelech Vayishlach El Yehoshaphat Melch Yudah. Now, of course, that means he sent him a messenger, but the word Vayelech Vayishlach make it sound like he's going out of his way to go grab Yehoshaphat's attention, not vice versa. So I think there's a distinction there. Keep in mind that graphically, let me see if I have a good map here. I think I do. Second. Just want you to get the sense of where things are taking place.
Yeah, this map here is...
You have a nice map there also?
No, I think it's...
Not big enough? Well, this map is pretty good. Here we have Yama Melach.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Dead Sea. Over here we have Shomron. That's in the Golan Heights, a little bit north of Shechem, I believe, of today. And Moab is...
Galil.
What's that?
The Galil.
Not yet. It's more close to like Jenin. It's at the very tip of the Shomron, right before you start going down. It's still mountain territory. You haven't gone down to Emek Yisrael yet. So it's certainly not in the Galil. It's even before Emek Yisrael. No, it's over here. This is all the Shomron. Hebron, Yushalayim, Shomron. Shiloh is probably around here. Here's Jericho. Moab is all the way over here, down to the river Arnon. Below the river Arnon is Edom. And above the river Arnon is a river that essentially cuts east, due east, out of Yam HaMelech. And to the south is... I'm sorry, I apologize. I'm wrong. That's wrong. I apologize. There is another river here called, Vadi El Chasa, which is called maybe Nachal Arava. To the south of this river, which is everything below Yam HaMelech, is Edom territory. From this river up to the Arnon is Moab. Above this is Reuben Gad.
Where's Ammon?
Ammon was out here. Although the truth is, by this time, probably the two had merged together. If you remember, I think it was last week, we did the excursus. We took a look at Yehoshaphat, and Ammon and Moab had gotten together to attack specifically Yehudah, which means they came, I don't know, it's hard to say. They may have come around, or they may have crossed Yam HaMelech, or they may have scooted up and over. If I remember correctly, no, they came through Ein Gedi, which means they probably had a dry season, and they probably rafted or something across Yam HaMelech, perhaps. Because to go down to Edom's territory is going to be a problem, and that's going to be a problem which is important for today's lesson, because Edom is a subject of Shevet Yehudah, which means as far as Moab is concerned, this is enemy territory. And you'll see why that's very important. So anyway, so here you have Yisrael cutting against Moab, which means you could tell that Moab is already sort of on the move north. And what he's going to do is he's going to call Yehuda into it, which makes sense because then you could theoretically attack them from both sides, a two-front war. That's not how they're going to play it, by the way, but that's theoretically what you have. It certainly makes sense to get Yehuda on your side to attack Moab, which is across the river, really. I guess more against, more across from Yehuda than it is across from Yisrael. But nonetheless, it was subject to Yisrael, probably because of God and probably because of the 2.5 tribes that were on the other side of the river. So he had a certain amount of control of the northern tribes over Moab, which was directly below Nahal Arnon. Okay. So that being said, I don't know if you want to slide down the map. Would that interest anybody if I slid down the map to people? Well, let me slide down. If you're interested, you can take a look at it. But otherwise, I'll read on. Vayelech vayishlach el Yoshafa melech Yehuda lemor melech Moab pashabi hatelech iti el Moab lemilchama vayomer e'eleh. I will go with you. Kamoni chamocha ke'ami chamecha kesusi chesusecha. My chariot is your chariot, my horse your horses. Now this sort of goes against my theory that it is Yehoram of the north, Yehoram the son of Achav, who's now subordinating himself to Yehoshaphat of Yehuda, but not just so fast, because the next pasuk something says very interesting. Vayomer Eimi zeh derech na'aleh. So Yehoram goes to Yehoshaphat and he said, which way should we go? You know, I'll take your advice. You, king of Yehuda, tell me, the king of Yisrael, how we're going to attack them.
Yeah, the king of Yisrael was leading the attack.
That's correct. Now it looks like essentially the king of Israel wants to attack, but he's asking the king of Yehuda the permission, the sort of like which way to go, advice. And which makes sense, honestly, from a year standpoint. Yehoshaphat is probably a senior by 20 years. He's an experienced warrior rather than the younger Yehoram. But nonetheless, one gets the feeling that Yehuda is in much better shape now than Achav's dynasty in the north. Vayomer derech midbar Edom. So he says something very interesting. So if you look at the map, what do they do? He said, let's take all of our forces and we'll do an end run all the way around. Instead of cutting through to the north, down the Reuben Gad territory and into, across Nahal Arnon and into Moab, they decide to go all the way around the Dead Sea, which is quite the trip. It's quite the trip even if you're Shevet Yehudah. But it's a tremendous trip if you're Shevet Yisrael, and it's a Yisrael war. So they're going to go all the way around the south end of the Dead Sea into Edomite territory, and then come up all the way Edomite territory and attack the capital city of Moab. The reason why they'd want to do this, the truth is, it makes sense. Surprise attack. Right? If you're expecting the bad guys to come over, you've just broken away from Yisrael. You expect Yisrael to attack you from the north. So the guy's covering up his face, so you hit him in the stomach. So there's a great deal of common sense to what Jehoshaphat is saying.
Would the two-pronged attack would have been better?
Yeah, you would think, but apparently a two-pronged attack still alerts, I'm guessing here, I'm speculating, I have no proof for this, but a two-pronged attack would alert King of Moab that Israel is coming. This way, theoretically, Moab has no clue whatsoever that there's an attack. All quiet is on the western front, so to speak. And all of a sudden, on the southern front, we got soldiers coming around boiling up from the south. So I think what Yehoshaphat was saying is, let's go for an absolute element of surprise. Also, I'm guessing that there may have been a weakening of Reuben and Gad already at this point, which we sort of detect from Mesha's stone. Mesha's stone is already talking about, when I, Mesha, rose to power, I started to tell them, you know, go take a walk. One gets a sense of a weakening of Reuben and Gad, which gives them a weaker northern front as well. So Yehoshaphat, I'm guessing correctly, because nobody is criticizing him here, decides let's go all the way around the south, and let's attack from the south. But something very interesting happens. I'll take this because I want to show you a different
question.
Yes,
Bonnie. Who asks which route to take and who answers?
Yeah, I would say, it never says it. However, since the last speaker in Pasuk Zion was Yehoshaphat, I am going to, my horses are your horses, my chariots are your chariots, my guess is that Yehoram is now, the natural read is that Yehoram of the north is now responding to Yehoshaphat and saying, which way should we go?
Well,
and then Yehoshaphat of the south says, let's go all the way around the south.
I can also understand that he's saying, my horses, your horses, my chariots, your chariots. Now, what direction do you want me to come from?
Yeah, that is correct. It is certainly possible to read that, but the other possibility that we're going to see is that Edom is the nation of Edom, who they're going to go through, is subservient to Shevet Yehuda. That's not something that a northern king could really decide to do.
Well,
that's
no,
something that Yehoshaphat. Well, what you
it
say
would be, it would be a natural thing to say,
let's go through your territory instead of my territory.
Yeah. Or the reason I came to you is because I want to come from that southern route.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is certainly possible. I don't think that's the way the Mefarshim go. I think it's a more difficult read just because when you have these conversations, unless you have reason to, generally the idea is to treat it like a tennis game. You know, the ball should be hit back and forth. However, what you're saying is certainly possible. The names, of course, here are missing. Herb would get upset because he'd want to know how come the names aren't mentioned, how come it's left ambiguous, and I don't have a great answer for that.
There,
what is the translation there?
It says, Jehoram went out of Samaria that day and mobilized all of Israel.
That's correct.
He went and said to Josaphat, king of Judah, saying, the king of Moab has rebelled against me. Will you go to war with me against Moab?
Right.
He said, I will go up.
Keep going.
I will be with you. I will be like you. My people shall be like your people.
Right.
And so he's talking.
That's Yehoshaphat talking, but now go to the next
keep
passage, verse 8.
My Lord shall be like... he then asked, by which route shall we go up?
Who asked?
Doesn't say. Right, I assume the article is not going to. Did the article put it in?
No.
He just says he said, so we don't say. Yeah, the same. It's just.
Which route do we go?
Yeah, it's as ambiguous in English as it is in Hebrew.
Well, a lot of
well,
people.
He then said, would you assume it's the guy who was speaking? Just
no, normally not, because when you have a vayomer, that usually indicates a change of conversation. The Vayomer usually indicates a change of conversation. Now, it could be a double change of conversation. It could be a conversation in between.
I could easily, safely read it both ways.
Okay.
No.
All right.
Maybe if we go a little further, we'll see.
All right, perhaps. All right, very good. You're not sliding us along,
sure.
Are you? okay. Vayomer is a derech na'aleh, Vayomer derech midbar Edom. So he said, let's go through Edom. So verse 9. Vayelech melech Yisrael u'melech Yudah u'melech Edom v'yasobu der Shvatnem. Now here's something very interesting. On the way through, they collect the king of Edom. Now that, I don't know if this is what you're hinting at, but this is something that only the southern king could pull off, because here it's not just a question of taking a route. It's a question of picking up a king on the way through. It's an alliance. He said, listen, I got a friend, and it's going to be a 3-on-1, not a 2-on-1. If we go through Derech Edom, not only do we have a surprise attack, but we're also going to pick up another guy on the way through. I want to read on, and just keep in mind, there's this idea in Tanakh of a Milat Mancha, which is a word which shows up over and over and over again. And normally, I usually make it to my students, I'm cruel, I make them figure it out for themselves, but it's sometimes very difficult. Here, look at how many times the word Edom shows up, and because Edom shows up a lot, I don't know if it's 7, it's simply a lot, and it's used in different ways, and that gives the impression that Edom is the key to everything that happens in this chapter. So let's continue on. Melech Edom, Yesobu Derech Shivat Yamim, they went 7 days all the way around. V'lo hayamayim l'machanela behima asher bragliyem, and they ran out of water. Now, I want to show you something, just so you get a sense of what's going on here. This is a modern, I don't know if everybody can see this, this is a modern picture of the land near Petra, which is the walk around Melech Edom. I'm going to slide it down. If you take a look at what these mountains look like, I don't know if anybody's gone hiking down there. I don't know if, even if you looked, everybody had been down to the Dead Sea, and you look over, I mean, it's like Machado on the other side. It may not be just like something exactly, but if you look over, you have these mountains, those red mountains, which is why they're called Edom, among other reasons. And they're rocky, craggy. They're tough hikes. Try to take 3 armies through. It's a you're going the long, slow way around in order to get the jump on them. But there's a risk.
Don't expect any.
That's correct. Absolutely. That's why it is a surprise attack. But of course, there's a risk.
Who would do that?
What's that? And you want to know something? They were right in a sense, because the Jews ran at it, because the Jewish forces, I shouldn't say Jews, Yehuda and Edom and Israel ran at it. There wasn't enough water. There wasn't enough water. Yeah.
Edom should have been able to supply that.
What's that?
Edom should have been able to supply
probably not enough not enough for all the horses and all the men. Also keep in mind that if you're on low rations, you're not much of a soldier anyway. So it's not just a question of having a cup or two. I mean, if you're a soldier, You need a whole bunch of water to get you through essentially a summer. This had to happen during the summer. Why was it not during the winter? Because it was during the winter. You couldn't cross those rivers. You can't cross those winters during the river. They're totally flooded. People are familiar in Israel. It was always tragedy in Israel, right? Always at the end of the first rains, there were always these floods come down and people washed off the road. There's always some, I don't know, half a dozen people, Rahmana, who get killed
Road around the Dead Sea often gets washed out.
Right, right. So during the winter, you're going nowhere. It's during the summer. But anybody who's ever walked up Masada or even walked on Masada during the summer knows what it's like. You get mighty dry, mighty fast. Now try carrying a sword, a shield, and enough ammunition or whatever to get you through. It's not a very simple thing. Anyway, yes, please.
To me, that when they picked up the king of Edom, they knew they were going through a safe route.
Yeah.
They just didn't go marching around with a big army into someone's land and without knowing that you're going to be relatively safe. Otherwise, you're going to have a war before you get to the war.
That's correct. Edom, the theory is that Edom is firmly on their side. Is that what you're saying? Sorry, didn't it?
Yeah.
That's correct.
It's a safe route.
That's correct, but they pick up this. That's correct. I think the issue was, I think they were expecting more water for some reason. It could have just been a bad season where you expect more water and they didn't have it. The question is, why didn't they don't know that there wasn't going to be enough water? So we'll take a look. Maybe there's something wrong with the nation of Edom. Am I not responding? I feel like
no,
I'm not.
I was referring just going that route as opposed to any other shorter route. They knew there was a safe route going through Edom.
Yes. Politically, and
they were going up through Moab. You may or may not have a war before you get to your main goal.
That's correct. That's correct. And we're going to see, by the way, that's exactly what Moab was hoping for. Moab was hoping for a turn of the political winds. We're going to take a look and see. That's very much the issue. That's how Moab is going to play this, and they're going to play it very well. So we'll continue on and see what happens. Verse 10. Am I on 10 already? Okay. Vayomer Melech Yisrael, aha! I always love that, by the way, because it translates exactly into English. Ah! And there's a mapikin hey. Do you see that? So it's like your throat has to catch. It's aha! I always do that with my high school students. They just love that because it's so expressive. But it's a literal translation. Ki kara Adonai v'shloshet ha'malachim ha'ilu l'tel otam b'yad Moav. So the king of Israel says, oh no, that God has called onto these three kings to put them into the end of Moab. It's a very strange use of the word kara. It means gazar dinam. He has called out about them, I think is probably the best way to translate it. It shows up every once in a while. You have the word kara in the sense that is he called out against them. But it's kind of rare. What's interesting is it's pretty frum on Yehoram's part, no? Yehoram is God. It's pretty frum. Yehoram of the north says God is the one who's against them. Is there no Navi around? Now, what's interesting is Yoram's from, but he's not that from. So Yoram doesn't go looking for a prophet. He just figures he's dead. Yehoshaphat says, wait, we got the whole God, you got the God card. You know, do you have any prophets with you? So he says, somebody says, yeah, I'll tell you, we got Elisha, which is interesting, because now we see that Elisha is active as sort of the military prophet. He's an active prophet. Looks like Yehoram ain't having much to do with him, and we'll see why in a second, but at least if there's a prophet in play, that's Elisha who is active in prophecy. By the way, the last part is very interesting. Po Elisha ben Shavat, asher yatsak mayim, who poured water, al yidei Eliyahu. That does not mean on the hands of Eliyahu. That would be modern Hebrew. Al yidei would mean instructed by Eliyahu. Right? Al yidei David Melech. That means we did it based on the instructions and the rules of. What that means is Eliyahu had told them to pour water. Now, we don't know exactly what that means. It could be that little showdown on Har Carmel with the lightning that came down, the fire that came down, and he had told one his people to pour water all around the Mizbeach to make it a real big miracle. So it could be Elisha was involved with that water pouring ceremony.
It seems to me that this could
that
well,
he washed his hands as a servant?
Yeah,
it's translated
that he served
here
him.
As?
Over the hands of Elisha.
Well, now you know why that's a bad translation. What is Al-Yudei David? What is Al-Yudei David? Al-Yudei David
by
doesn't
the hands
mean,
of.
Yeah, it doesn't mean on the hands of. It means by the hands of, which means by the order of, or by the instruction of, or by the control of. Yeah, it's simply not... I can't say I'm 1,000% sure, but I think if you look up every Ayudei,
it flows. It's Yotzak Mayim Ayudei Amiyot.
It does flow. It happens to be wrong. It flows very nicely, but it's wrong. here it could be translated either way. But what I'm saying is that's only a modern Hebrew translation. Only somebody who's familiar with modern Hebrew, but not biblical Hebrew, I think would make such a. Do we have a? I didn't bring my. Oh, do we have another English translation? What do you have there on Ayudei? I am willing to stand corrected, but I'm pretty. I feel firm about this.
The
poured water on the hands of Eliyahu.
Yeah, I don't think that's right.
Three against one.
He was a servant of him. I've never seen anywhere else in Tanakh that just because a guy washed it, was he a Levi or something?
Yeah,
I don't know.
How would you say in biblical Hebrew he turned the poured
Isn't
water
that
on his
a
hands?
Sign of respect?
How would you say he poured water on his hands?
Yeah.
No, you would say Al Yadav. I don't know. Of course, if you put Eliyahu, it becomes Al Yadav Eliyahu, but I don't think you ever have such a... I don't think that expression ever shows up. I just don't think... Verachat? No, you would say, of course, like it said by Abraham, Verachat Yadav. You wouldn't say Vayitzak Bo Mayim Al Yadav. It would say like Abraham, Verachat Yadav Vedlaglav. He washed his hands and his feet.
Yeah.
Let me take a look at Mefarshim here, because it's all the English... I wish I had the JPS, because the JPS would be... It's probably
what
the best.
The
what?
JPS.
No, that's not the JPS. No, it's the Jerusalem Bible. The JPS is the Jewish Publication Society. That's the not Maskir. I have one every once in a while. You have the old JPS, but the old JPS actually, this one, is based actually on the King James.
Yeah, that's
it's the new JPS, which people still, it's probably worse. The old one's based on Christians. That we have, but the new ones, which is based on Maskilish Hebrew, not everybody was from, so that doesn't show up in shuls very often. So, but let me take a look at the Targum and see what it says. We're in Melachim Bet Perek Gimel. What pasuk?
Yud Aleph.
Pasuk Yud Aleph. How are we doing time wise? We're doing okay actually. So Rashi says, Bahar Carmel. He did it on the Mount Carmel. That's when he didn't pour water on his hands. He had the water on the trenches. Ubi Yitzikato Nasu Etzbaotav Kima'ayinot Mayim. And when he poured it, his hands, that is Elisha's hands, became like fountains of water. Until the entire trench had gotten full. So Rashi obviously knows that Ayudei, it means that, that's when, remember when Eliyahu said, pour once, and they did it, and he said, pour twice, and they did it, and he said, pour three times,
right,
and he did
but
it.
But then they did it, and here it's just Elisha.
That's cool, you're right. I agree with you. There are other...
Well,
there
have been other people there, too, but Elisha was...
But Elisha's hands were the one who filled them up.
But he's saying there's this navi that.
Yeah, he was there with them.
For Eliyahu.
Yeah, at that time he was. At that time, keep in mind, Eliyahu had not been fired. Elisha had not been selected. He was one of Eliyahu's narim. He was who, for all we know, and Chazal do say, if you remember, there was a nar that he told to keep running back and forth to see if a cloud came over the Mediterranean.
Mm-hmm.
So some people say that was Eliyahu, and that's what it means, Yitzhak Mayim, because it was Elisha. So that's why Rashi doesn't even try it on the hands of. So I have to say, all of you have. I'll read Radak. I'm sure he'll confirm if he mentions it all. It's just not. It just doesn't show up. It's just a. It's borrowed from modern Hebrew. Let's see. Radak says. Ubidrash amar od asher yatzak mayim al yedei Eliyahu. Bahar Carmel, Kishemalah Mizbeach Matala Mayim. So he brings down the same thing Rashi does, and he brings down the whole Midrash. There's no sense the other way. I'll read the Targum Yonatan, which would be the oldest translation that we have, which hopefully we can understand. Yeah, okay. So here we have the following. Va'amar Hacha Elisha, here is Elisha, Bar Shafat, Gishamesh Yat Eliyahu. That he was Eliyahu's servant. That doesn't mean he poured water. I mean, okay, now you want to say Eliyahu poured water. I think that means that he simply did when Eliyahu said pour, he poured. I think that's the correct translation. I think any other translation is a mistake. We could do a Bar Ilan search for all the Ayudeis, but I'm confident what we'd find is Ayudei David. I'm trying to think of other Ayudeis. It means by the instruction of. Anyway, so I thought we'd have a little fun with that. It's just say I'm a little surprised. Not one. Is that brown one the same as these pinkies that are up here? The ones that are up here.
Which
the ones that are right behind, up on the shelf here. Is it the same publication? I don't want to belabor a point. I mean, I've already won, so it's like, I can't get enough.
Oh.
Yeah.
That was
am I dropping a safer?
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if they have that King.
No, we've looked before.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay. So another time. Let's see. All right.
So how would you translate?
Are you
day
by the instruction of
Mayim?
Are you day that he poured water based on the instructions of Eliyahu? Eliyahu said, "Pour, you pour."
Oh, and you're talking about the incident of the Baal.
That's what Chazal say with the incident of the Baal on the mountain. Or you could just do a Targum, which means he just followed his instructions, which is Al Yedei, like Al Yedei David Mashiach of Kacha. Where were we? You bet. Vayomer Yehoshaphat Yesho To Devar Hashem.
Why didn't Yehoshaphat bring a Navi along?
I don't know.
You should have.
Maybe because it wasn't his war? Maybe because he's making a mistake? I don't know. I never thought about it.
Mm.
I didn't even look in the Farshim. So Bli Neder, I'll remember that question.
He showed around.
No, because he said, is there anybody here? I don't know.
He's one who answered this guy.
No, it was an Evid of the North who answered.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a good question. Why wouldn't he bring his own prophet? And he had his own prophets, by the way. We met his prophet. Remember his prophet that saved him? We did that last week, where
right,
he's in
right.
trouble with Ammon and Moab, and it's this prophet, Levi. I can't remember what his name was, but he came back, and he did a thing. I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know.
Prophets are higher.
I don't know why. I mean, you figured a king would have his prophet. Anyway, continuing on. Vayomer Yehoshaphat Yeshutot Devar Adonai Vayerdu Elav Melech Yisrael VYehoshaphat Melech Edom UMelech Edom. So they all go down. Now keep in mind that Yehoshaphat is not named king here. He's only Yehoshaphat. And we have the other ones who are named kings, but we don't know what their names are. Vayomer Elisha El Melech Yisrael. So he turns to Melech Yisrael and goes, Ma Livalach, I got no relationship with you. Lechem Leviyah Avicha. Why don't you go to the prophets of your father? Leviyah Imecha, the prophets of your mother. Vayomer lo melech Yisrael, ow, I won't do it. Ki kara Adonai l'sholem alachim ha'eila, l'tei lo tam yam alav. I won't do it, because I know God's the one who's punishing us, and therefore I'm going to go to a prophet of God. It's very interesting, it's kind of this weird thing. Elisha won't have anything to do with him, he hates him. I don't know, he hates him personally, but he won't have anything to do with him whatsoever. He
and
won't even talk to him. What's that?
And what's
that's,
there?
That's a good question, which may also explain why maybe God told him that I need you to be with this war.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is an Eved of the king of the north knew that Elisha was there, but the king of the north didn't know. Elisha was sort of hanging out with the troops. He didn't get a personal invitation by the king. It's a very interesting, he doesn't want to talk to him at all. What's interesting is Yehoram is not a wimp, though. Yehoram says, I'm going to you, buddy, because I know this is from God, so I want to talk to you. Won't have anything to do with him, though. Vayomer Elisha, Chai Adonai Tzvod Asher Amanti Lefanav, I swear to God that I stood before him, which just sounds exactly like Eliyahu.
Mm-hmm.
He is now coming into his own as an Eliyahu-like character. Kilulei Pnei Yehoshaphat Melech Yudah, you know, say, I will talk to Yehoshaphat. Im Abit Elecha V'im Ereka, and I swear im means low. I won't talk to you. I don't even look at you.
Oh, dear.
How do you like that? Yeah, the news having nothing to do with him. V'atak chulim v'nagein. And now what I want you to do is get me a musician. V'ayak nagein ha-menagein v'atihi alav yad Hashem. When they played music for him, then he had prophecy. Now this opens up a whole issue, which I'm not going to get into today, about what we probably know the famous statement, that a person who is an avelut, a person who's sad, cannot do prophecy. So the point of the music was to get him in a good mood and to create a state of perhaps transcendentalness, a certain transcendental state that would allow him to prophecy. Chazal sometimes a little more critical, by the way. Sometimes one Chazal opinion was a little more critical of Elisha. They said when a person has anger, he loses his nevuah and his chachma, which I could certainly attest to. Anybody who speaks in anger, you know,
yeah.
As I could personally attest, usually, as I've often said, anybody, you know, I don't think I ever have not regretted something I didn't jump up and say right away without thinking about it. So that's just, I think just human nature, so Chazal had it right. But the Nevuah also, that's a little bit of criticism against Elisha, that he was perhaps a little too angry with a guy who was trying to make some kind of relationship.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, I mean, obviously Chazal have a dispute. There's a philosophical dispute about whether Elisha was playing Yehoram of the North correct or not. But in any event, he says what he says. There's another case like this. If you remember when Shaul is looking for his donkeys, he finds Shmuel, and Shmuel says, when you go from here, the first sign you're going to see is a Chebel Nevi'im. It's going to be a group of Nevi'im who will be coming down, and they're going to be playing various instruments. It was just something people did. People used music to create a capacity for transcendental communication, the ability to leave one's body, so to speak, to communicate with God. I don't mean to minimize it, because of course, if I use the word transcendentalization, I minimalize prophecy. There is a difference, but I think there's also similarities. One has to forget one's body and one's surroundings in order to achieve a state of being able to tune into God.
Did David play the harp when he was
Shaul try to be happy? Yeah, he took away his ruach ra. Although in that case, it was sort of the opposite. He was trying to bring him back to the status quo. Because without the music, Ruach Ra means that he was, Shaul's bananas. He was crazy. He was crazy. So essentially, he calmed down his spirit. But yeah, you're right. He was working from minus 10, and he brought Shaul back to zero. Here, what they're trying to do is take, Elisha wants to go from zero to plus 10, so he could actually tune into God. But yes, it's very much the same idea. And the truth is, I know I'm a big fan of music. I remember, I was a big Zeppelin fan, still am, and there's nothing like... what's that? Well, yeah, well, there's drugs also, which is probably not... there was not in use by prophecy. There's no indication that prophecy is... What? Yeah, people always say that one of the was a narcotic. Or a hallucinogen. I've never found that to be true. I think the names, we don't know some of the names, so I can't say it's not true, but I don't sense that's true. Keep in mind that Eli Ailey yelled at Hannah for daring to show up drunk to in front of the Bein HaMikdash. So one does not sense that drugs were positively viewed in the Torah, although it really talks about wine more than anything else. And I'm sure they knew about other things. There was certainly, they had not tabak, but there was that other. I think weed was known in those days.
Poppy
was grown for a century. Did they know about it back then? Poppy already? Did they know heroin back then? In the Middle East?
I
have no clue. Yeah, but the question is, they knew how to process it. I don't know. I have to say, I'm not a... What? Yeah, I suppose, you still have to come across it. You have to step into it. But I don't sense the prophecy involves drug use of any kind, but music for sure. And there's nothing, you ask the teenagers, they turn the lights down, turn the music up, and you lie down on the bed and you float away. I mean, that's part of the process, and it's not necessarily a negative thing. It's just the way people do it. I mean, it depends on how you use it. Vayomer ko amar Adonai... This river. Now what happens is that they're on the empty river that they're about to cross over into Edomite territory, I think, or some river here. So he says what's going to happen is the Nachal is going to produce Gevim Gevim. Gevim are what happens when a river dries up. There are holes or little cisterns in the ground and it leaves pockets of water. So he says you're going to see what's going to happen is tomorrow morning you're going to find out that there's not going to be water in the river, so to speak, but you're going to find out that there are all these little pockets of water. You're not going to see any wind. It's not going to rain. But nonetheless, this river is going to fill up with water. There's going to be so much overflow of water that's going to overflow and produce like these cracks where the water fills up. But what's interesting is no rain. It's just like the flood's going to come, so to speak, from nowhere. At least he's not going for the little miracle. He's going for the big miracle. But he says, and that's not enough. I'll tell you what else is going to happen. And this is going to be an easy thing for God to do. I'll tell you what he's really going to do. V'natan et Moab yadchem. He's going to give you Moab in your hands. Now watch what happens here. It's a little bit strange. V'hi kitem kol ir mitzar. You're going to wipe out every fortified city. That kol ir mitzar and every chosen city. V'chol etz tov tapilo. And every fruited tree you're going to knock down.
Oh dear.
V'chol mayan.
I thought that was against the law.
Ah, that's exactly right. The chol mayne mayim to stomu and all of the wells of water you're going to fill up with rocks, which makes it sound like Avinelech when he was filling up Yitzchak's wells. The chol chelka tova tachivu b'avanim, and every piece of land you're going to do a scorched earth policy, you're going to rip out the stones completely. Now this is very strange. So Chazal obviously have to deal with it. So one possibility is that Moab deserved worse treatment than average. because they were a more disgusting nation than average. But I mean, there's nothing in the pasuk that says that. You just have to read it in. The other possibility is to say that only happens. That rule about not taking down fruited trees is only during siege, because that's where the pasuk shows up in Sefer Devarim.
Yeah.
Here is not a siege. They are asking them to simply go through all the orchards and knock down the fruited trees. So it's not so much a siege as it is. What's that? Well, no. Here's the problem. See, that's the way in Devarim. You could always tell of Navi Sheker. How do you tell Navi Sheker? It's when he goes against the Torah. Not in Devarim. I'm sorry, in Vayikra, if I'm not mistaken. So the question is this one? I'm always a little here and there. I mean, Chazal take it that what he was doing was saying the right thing. I could at least say the wrong thing. On the other hand, keep in mind that in the same situation, we had Micha lying to him also. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
Micha said, "I want you to go up to make war because you'll do just fine." And Achav says, "I know you're lying to me. So tell me the truth." Were the kings supposed to pay attention here? I wonder. I've not seen this anywhere else in my own idea, so it's no doubt wrong, because, I mean, it's just a very strange thing to say. Was it possible that Elisha was setting them up to recognize that the prophecy he was telling them was bad? Because remember that when
Didn't it work?
No, they lose the war.
Oh.
Which makes it worse, because the prophecy never comes true.
Mm.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's why my... So let me read through where we lose the war. So you know what? Let's leave this question on the side to make sure we get to the end of the war. Just, I want you to keep that in mind. The very fact that it tells them to do something against the Torah usually should set off alarm bells. Chazal do their best to say it wasn't really against the Torah. But if we read simple pshat, maybe the people were supposed to say Elisha, if they didn't think it was a Navi Sheker, because I doubt they would have thought that Elisha was a Navi Sheker, maybe they should have thought, just like Michael, we remember Michael, he was trying to lie to us as some kind of part of the play that he wanted. Maybe you're trying to tell us not to go to war also. Maybe if you tell us go to war in a way that's us or against the Torah, what you're really trying to say is don't make this war, go around. Take the water, drink the water, and now get the heck out of town and go back home because you're doing the wrong thing. I don't know. That's not what Chazal say. That's what I say. And I'm not even sure I'm right, but let me continue on with the parak and then just, you know, keep that in mind. Pasachaf. Vayihi baboka kalotim in chaviyei amayim bayim in derech Edom. The water came out of Edom. Now again, that's one of those things where the word Edom is being played, because of course it came out of Edom's territory. Where else would it come out of? They're in Edom's territory. So the emphasis on the idea that it came from Eretz Edom, that the water comes out of Edomite territory. By the way, think about it politically. How would the king of Edom now feel? He's just saved Melech Yisrael and Melech Yehuda. So there's something political going on. We'll see. I'll try to play that up a little bit later. But Timalea Aretz at the mine. The whole water filled, the whole land filled with water. The Chol Moab Shamu Kialu Amalachim Lachem Bam. So now Moab is on the alert. So surprise is over. Probably it took them longer than expected because they ran out of water. Also, when the water probably started coming in, they sent scouts, what's going on with this flooded river, and all of a sudden I got a whole army across on the other side of the river on the southern border of Moab. Mikol choger b'cha, so by Yitzaku, mikol choger b'chagorav amala, they took every, to be honest, mikol choger b'chagorav, they took every single soldier and on up in rank. I think that's the best way to describe it. And they stood on the border, which means they're on one side of the river, and the newly flooded river, and the Israel, Yehuda, and Edom on the other side. And they woke up in the morning. They had an angle of water that was shining, the angle of the sun was shining on the water. And they saw the water, and it looked like blood to them. Now again, look at the emphasis of the word Edom. Edom and Dam. Just over and over you have this emphasis of the word Edom. Vayomru Dam Zeh Hacharev Nechervu HaMalachim. I'll tell you what happened. The kings attacked each other. Now it makes sense. Even if you don't want to say that Yehuda and Yisrael would attack each other, they might well have thought that Edom decided to have them where they wanted. Something is going on with this alliance. They've attacked each other. And they all attacked each other. Let's go and take all of the booty. Big mistake, of course. Big mistake. They come to the Machane Yisrael, which is interesting. They don't go to Machane Yehuda. He's saying, now, Moab, let's go and take. You have to put the word Moab sort of behind. And take
let's go
plunder
Moab.
Yeah, no, the word Moab applies to is the direct object of the sentence, not the indirect object of the sentence.
Subject.
Yeah.
It would be called the vocative. Oh you, oh here you, Moab. That would be the, yes, you're right, the subject. Vayavo el machane Yisrael, vayakumu Yisrael, vayakumu Moab, vayanusu mipneem, vayakuba vahakopa Moab. So they really, big mistake on Moab, very bad tactical error. They were sure, however, that the war had gone against them. Who knows why, but certainly the blood turned, the sense that there was blood in the river was a key in, and they made a big mistake, they attack and they lose. Varim Yaharosu, and the Israelites, they destroyed their cities. So they did exactly what Elisha told them to do, for better or worse. They knocked down all the fruit trees, they filled up all the wells, and now the only city left is called Kir Harashet. Kir Harashet is another name for the capital city of Moab.
Israel was successful.
They were. Oh, wait, the war's not over yet. Yeah, that's correct, and they knocked down a lot of cities, and now they're at the capital city where everything looks just peachy keen. But wait, things are going to turn at the last minute. I hate to ruin a good surprise, but there it is. Vayasobo Kalaim Vayakua, by the way, that would be the stone. Kalaim is a slingshot, but here they're talking about the siege engines, which are throwing stones onto the wall. I have a picture I'm not going to show you right now, but the capital city of Moab, which is still, we have it today, it's not an active city, but it's on the top of this, you know, pretty much a big flat mountain, like a Masada, not Masada, but a significant mountain, so when you have walls there, you're essentially attacking up, you know, in a Yerushalayim type of thing.
That's in Jordan?
It is in Jordan,
yeah.
That's correct. Yeah. Vayar Melech Moab ki chazak mi'ero nochama. So he saw that the war was going very bad against him. Vayikach oto shva mi'odis. He takes a force of 700. Sholbev cherev, good soldiers, good with swords. Lahav kia el melech Edom v'lo yacholo. So he tries to lead an attack against Edom forces specifically, and he was unsuccessful. Now the question is, what is he hoping to accomplish? What's that?
I got the breakthrough.
To either, it could be the breakthrough, but where is he going to go? He's still got his capital city. I mean,
isn't Edom doing the provisioning?
I think what he's hoping to do is to knock Edom out of the war,
right,
or possibly even turn Edom. You know, it's not unheard of in war. You put a little pressure on one of the allies,
mm-hmm,
and the allies figure, you know what, we're better off with the winners than the losers. So that's what Vayivaka El Melech Edom V'lo Yacholu. He simply was unsuccessful. I don't think it's not just unsuccessful. Vayivaka means to break them open. You know, that's a very strange word there. I think the implication is he wants to. He thinks that Edom is the key, the hinge on which the war turns, which is true. Edom's got the provisions. It's Edom territory, or at least close to Edom territory. If he can knock Edom out of the war, then he's in good shape, and if he could turn the sides, he's in super good shape. It's a nice move, actually. The only problem is he doesn't succeed.
And also comes the reinforcements there in Edom territory.
Mm-hmm.
So
correct.
You're close to Edom.
Absolutely. Now look at this pasuk. Vayikach et b'no abachor. So he, that is the king of Moab, takes his firstborn son, Asher Yimloch Tachtav, who is destined to rule after him, Vayaleu Ola Alachoma, and he raised him as a sacrifice on the wall, which means for everybody to see. Vayhi Ketzef Gadol Yisrael, and there was an anger or some kind of wrath on Israel. Vayisum Elav, and they left. Vayashuvu La'aretz, and they go back home. War's over, which means essentially Moab wins.
I don't think so. Moab is destroyed.
They keep the capital city. Keep in mind that when it says, you know, they stopped up every tree and every wall, it's,
I understand that, but you don't think Moab is going to give tribute?
No, actually, they don't continue to give tribute. There's no sense that Moab comes back under the, if I'm not mistaken, I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure. You know, I don't want to say. I don't know. What's interesting, by the way, is what we do know is something I mentioned last week. The next country to give up, stop paying tribute, is not under Yehoshaphat's time, but Yehoshaphat's son time, Yehoram, the one who killed all his brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And which country stopped paying tribute some 5-6 years later? Edom stopped paying tribute, mm-hmm, to Israel.
No, to Yehuda.
To Yehuda, thank you. So, you're right. I don't know whether to call it a tie. In some sense, it's a loss because there's no doubt that Israel wanted to take out Moab and get back what they wanted. And here what they do is they run away. And the pasuk, by the way, is very vague. And you know what else is very vague? We did all of Yehoshaphat last week. There was no mention of this.
Mm.
No mention. Ezra did not want to mention. And even this pasuk seems to be going out of its way to not describe the battle. Vayihi ketzef b'Yisrael v'halach la'etzo. We don't know what the ketchup was. We don't know what's going on. We don't know the battle turns. We don't know if people died, if people didn't. All of a sudden, everybody, something bad enough happens that the Jews get the heck out of town. That what?
A sense of guilt.
Go ahead.
After having, you know, really wiped out the country, destroyed, you know, their orchard, the trees, wells, the walled cities, and then the king sacrifices his oldest son, who was going to be the king after him,
right.
And they said, oh, wow, what did we do to this place? And they left.
You mean what, we turned them into animals, so to speak?
No.
That's a very progressive...
Like, we were animals in what we've done to them.
Right.
But
religiously, what's very interesting, it could be they're saying we're busy breaking the Torah law, and he's busy acting like Abraham. Now, Chazal go in different ways. Chazal go nuts on this kind of thing. Some say it's a machoket Rav and Shmuel. Rav was saying he was makriv his son, he sacrificed his son, l'shem Shamayim, and Shmuel said it was l'shem Avodah Zarah. But according to Rav, he was actually praying to the God of Avraham that Hashem should treat him as well as he treated Avraham, because he's willing to sacrifice his son. So even though it may have been misguided, his heart was in the right place. And then the Gemara says, I understand, according to Rav, why Israel lost the war, so to speak, because here's the king of Moab doing a good thing. But according to Shmuel, it was doing a Avodah Zarah, like Moloch worship, essentially, that how come the Jews lost the war? Because they said because northern Israel was also involved in Moloch worship. And essentially, Moab showed up the sins of Israel, and Israel went home. That's not the pshat, but that you could see Chazal trying to struggle with this very idea. What happens all of a sudden? Why all of a sudden this guy takes the son who's going to rule after him, sacrifice him, and all of a sudden, bingo, the war's over. There's no prophetic comment. A prophet doesn't say this is a great thing or this is a bad thing. This was good in the eyes of the Lord, not good in the eyes of the Lord. And the prophet doesn't say whether they deserve to lose the battle or not lose the battle. All we know is that the prophecy of Elisha is a super weird prophecy, because first he tells him to break Torah law, as far as we can tell, and then he tells him you're going to win the war with a big miracle. And what happens? Okay, they may not lose the war, so to speak, but they certainly don't win the war.
Well,
so what happened to the prophecy of Elisha?
They destroyed the land. Okay? And the king killed the successor to the throne, basically cutting off the sovereignty of Moab.
Well,
yeah, although now if I was...
Basically, the mission accomplished, we can go home.
That's it. He catch up the Israel. Doesn't fit into the word.
Arshkol has a good...
what does Arshkol say, guy?
It says, Meshach slew the firstborn of the Edomite king.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to say that right now. Hold on. I'm gonna do that in Radak.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, our school didn't think of it by itself, actually.
Okay.
It's an old idea, but I'll read that to you right now. See, according to the Radak, we misread. Remember, he attacks. He goes in to attack Edom. And don't forget, Edom is the key to this whole thing. Everybody is always focusing on Edom, because Edom is the hinge upon who the winner will rely. If Edom's on the Israel side, they have water, they have the ability to fight. If they're on, they're the power broker. Edom finds itself in a power broker situation, which is why I mentioned that Edom will break away in 5 years from what we're dealing with. Anyway, from 5 to 10 years, they will actually break away. That's important information to know, even though you don't find out about it later, which is why sometimes you have to read Tanakh a few times until you're able to put things together. So I want you to know something. That's a wonderful read. The read in this sense, of course, not Chazal's read, is as follows. Let's go back and we'll read it again, which is, he attacks them, he can't win, but he did have 700 soldiers down there. So it looks like they took the prince from the war, and what happens is, lost my place. Vayikach et beno, he took his son, the king of Moab, took Edom's son, and he sacrificed him on the top of the walls. And then there was ketzef in Yisrael, and now you can understand where the ketzef came from. There were no miracles coming down from the sky. The ketzef against Israel was whom?
Edom.
Was Edom. Edom's like, forget this.
Yeah.
Forget
were,
this. This
angry.
Isn't worth it.
They were
angry. I'm putting out my forces. We're supporting your war, and I got my son up there on the sacrifice. I'm out of here. Or maybe I'll even fight you. And Israel decides, time to get out of here. We're going home. Now, Radak, by the way, it's very interesting. And just, I want to read you a little Radak. I know I always go over time. I apologize. But I just want to give you insight to Radak, because it's a beautiful little view into the personality of his family. So he says like this. I mean, our scroll is good. But I'd like to read Radak.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the original.
It says Radak.
What's that? Oh, he does. Mitzvah. Oh, close Radak. Beautiful. What's interesting is not even Radak. So I'll read it to you. It's kind of nice. What pasuk is it? Gimel pasuk.
It's pasuk.
What's that?
Chapzayin.
Oh. Yeah, Vayikachu, but Perush Adoni Avizal. It's nice, actually. My father, my teacher, taught me. His father's name was, I want to say Avram Kimchi, but I'm not sure. His brother was Moshe Kimchi. I think his father was, no, David Kimchi. No, no, his name was David Kimchi. I think his father was Avram Kimchi. So he says, Adoni Avizal ki ben melech Edom hara'ui limloch tachtav hu bershut melech Moab. He was actually in the control of melech Moab. And that's why he came with the other two kings in the first place, because he wanted his son back, because his son was being held hostage, according to his father.
Ah.
And that's why he threw in his lot with Yehuda and Israel. So I'm not crazy about that, because usually he threw in his lot because he was already subordinate to Yehuda. So I'm going to skip over that, and then I'm going to get to this next part. V'rabi achi Rav Moshe Zal. And my teacher, my brother of Moshe, it's very nice. Again, this whole Radak family, this is like a whole family, if you know. We only know the Radak, but can you imagine, you know, what it would be like at their Shabbat table to have the Radak and Moshe and the father? Must have been, I bet their Shabbat meals went quite on time while they argued about Psukim. So he said, Rav Moshe Zal Perish Ki Kasher Chashav Lahabkia Melech Moab Melech Edom Azla Kach Beno. It wasn't that the Edom was with Israel, because he had to be with Israel. What happened was, during that attack, they managed to pick up the king's son. And they burnt him to the eyes of his father, which is essentially, you know, this is what we're going to do to you, Edom, if you continue in this way. Because Israel said, he's a son of Edomite, you know, they're a dime a dozen. So of course you have to read stuff into the pasuk. There's no choice, because the pasuk specifically obfuscates. However, I have to say, the big I lied in my letter. The big answer, and probably the correct answer, was to why, even though Chazal disagree, the big answer to how is it possible that he did such a disgusting thing to his own son, and why would God respond like that, is because he never did such a thing. He didn't take his own son. He wasn't trying to be like Avraham. There was nothing going on like that. He took Edom's son because he knew that Edom was the player. Edom was the key to the success of this battle completely. As we saw, the word Edom shows up and over, and he knew if he could just turn Edom, he could turn the tide of battle, and he did something very smart. He burnt up Edom's son, and that sent a shockwave through Edom, and Edom either said, I'm out of here, or I'm fighting you, or the war simply was over. It was done. I mean, you cannot fight on enemy territory unless you have the kind of support from the locals. And he didn't. They didn't. And Israel lost the war. Again, that gets us back to the question: was Elisha lying? Did God not keep his promise? Do you follow? The prophecy did not really come true. You could argue he didn't entirely lose the war. Maybe consider it a win, even though it was a close tie in overtime. Nonetheless, I question the entire prophecy. I wonder whether Elisha was setting up Yehoshaphat. Don't forget, we have seen negative prophecy against Yehoshaphat for siding and coming together with the Achav family. Perhaps this was, perhaps, because nobody else says this but me, so it makes me very suspect, perhaps Elisha was sending the same message to Michayu: you're doing the wrong thing, go home. Except they took him literally, they went against the Torah, they lost the war to the real degree, because they weren't really paying attention to Elisha. Of course, if what I was saying was true, that should show up somewhere in the text. And it doesn't.
Well, in terms of the way that Popsy came through, it was only part of it.
What's that?
Popsy came through up to a point.
The fact that they won the field battle. That's what Anne wanted to say. But one doesn't get the sense, when God says he's going to give you Moab, you expect the capital city to come down. It seems to be with this one act, everything turns around. Is God not in control? I don't think we could possibly say such a thing. If it's a real prophecy, either you have to say that I'm overreading the prophecy, and the prophecy was just success at a limited war, or the prophecy was changed by some act. I don't know. It's a tough paradigm.
Why did the Edomites depend on Israel to save the boy? Why did they do it themselves?
Why didn't who do it themselves?
The Edomites were angry at Israel for not saving the son.
Because they weren't the big powerhouses. Their army was probably much, much smaller than Israel's. And I'm sure it was. As a vassal state to Yehuda, I'm sure it was much more. They were the supply wagons. They weren't trained soldiers. They were probably mostly Bedouins. And so
they felt that Israel had
power, responsibility. It was Israel's war. You go save my son.
Stop it.
Yeah.
And they did.
Son was killed. Why not stay in the war and try and get revenge?
Get revenge, yeah.
Well, I mean, you don't always. Sometimes you get the guts taken out of you. You know, even if they didn't. Even if they didn't. But ketchup doesn't have to be
a powerful tool.
That's what you mean. You would expect if he sacrificed a human being that Hashem would go and be angry and do something angering at him. It's a difficult parsha. If we go back to the idea that he was sacrificing his own son, like Abraham, then the question is that really a good thing? Wouldn't Hashem be angry then? And if he was happy about it, why then doesn't God say anything? The psukim just—it's so vague. The psukim just don't give us a clue as to who's doing the right thing and who's doing it. There is intentional ambiguity. Thank you. I always have problems with that. There is intentional ambiguity here, and the question is, you know, why? I mean, that I don't completely have an answer. I mean, we present the idea of the Radak, we present the idea of Chazal. I don't know if any solutions. You said there's a problem with the psukim. Does anything work out well with the psukim? Can you come up with any? What's the problem with the psukim? Theoretically, it should be the same person.
Well, I'll settle for being the other person, but there is no other person mentioned in the last couple of psukim.
Oh, there is Edom. He attacks Edom. Who takap at Edom?
The country or Edom the king? No.
Yeah, I think the king and his forces.
I don't know.
What does it say in the previous chapter? Does it say the king? Probably not. It probably just says Edom.
It's confusing. The wording is very confusing. When it says sacrifice, it's very confusing because, you know, I mean, he murdered the boy.
Yeah.
So what kind of sacrifice?
Well,
you know,
it's
a plain
murder.
Yeah. Also, you
know,
he did it.
He killed him in public.
It could also. That's correct.
He put him up on the wall.
That's like hanging somebody.
That's called psychological warfare.
But that's
he
not
was saying
sacrifice. Sacrifice is like Avram did to his son.
No, but
you.
It says Haleil Olah. No, I would say it's still sacrifice because what you're doing is you're saying no. It's a very powerful statement. You're merging warfare in with cult, and you're creating the sense that anybody who comes in through these doors, I guarantee that they're going to burn up here on the wall. You can keep fighting, but you Edom are going to burn person by person. That's very powerful. By the way, let's assume that he captured the prince. Did he capture other people as well? Is it possible he captured other? We don't know. The psukim don't tell us. You can make up anything you want here because this is one of those cases where the psukim simply leave us intentionally. You can only say intentionally to leave us high and dry. They refuse to talk about it.
The way it translates is very confusing. It says, and he then took his firstborn son who was to reign after him and sacrifice him.
All you have is pronouns.
Yeah, but read the sentence before.
Huh?
Read the last half of the sentence before. After the 700...
The shooters then went around and destroyed it. When the king of Moab saw the war was too difficult for him, he took the 700 swordsmen with him to break through to attack the king of Edom, but they could not do so.
They attacked the king of Edom.
Right, which means he is the last singular antecedent.
Yeah.
He's the last singular. Now, there is a more recent plural antecedent. Below Yaholu, they, as in Moab, was not successful. But the last singular antecedent is Edom. But you can't play that completely because when it says Vayikach et Beno, in order to make this work, Vayikach has to be one pronoun pointing towards Moab, and Beno has to be the other pronoun pointing at the king of Edom. While it's possible, all I could say is, I'm afraid Herb would be beating me up right now, all I could say is there's intentional ambiguity here. I have too many antecedents, and the Torah is going out of its way not to tell me who's doing what to whom.
Yeah, right.
Either the only way to simply read it is just to say it's just referring to Moab. He took his own son and he put him up on the wall to sacrifice him.
That's what the king grabbed 700 soldiers.
That was his own people. He attacked 700 soldiers.
Yeah. Attacked the king of Edom.
Right. That didn't work.
But they weren't successful.
Right.
So he took his son and put him up on the
sacrifice. Yeah, and then the question is for what?
Yeah.
Did he feel that the gods would then come out?
Yeah.
That's what Rabbi Shmuel said. Once they was
you know, he could have been out of despair saying I've lost.
No,
but the very fact that they're attacking,
he's asking for help.
You know why I think the Radak family is right? Because the fact that they attack Edom is curious. You want to attack, who are you attacking Edom for? Alright, so you could say maybe because Edom's forces are weaker, but if you really believe that you can take 700 people and attack, so go for the head. You know, look at what Aram did. They attacked Achab, they got him dead, and everybody else went home. Why are you attacking the supply troops, the third most important people?
Because they came through Edom. They were all of them were together, weren't they?
No, the camps are separate. The camps are always separate. How do we know that? Because it says, after they thought that all the nations had killed each other, they came to Machane Yisrael to pick up the booty. They probably thought that Edom had a field day in their own territory with home court advantage against Israel. And that also indicates that the Machanot were completely separate. The camps were completely separate, which makes sense. You don't want the soldiers to mingle. They don't like each other. Edom doesn't like Yehud and Yisrael. You want to keep the soldiers away from each other to avoid fights.
If they were just providing supplies, the king wouldn't have been with them.
No, I think there was. I don't think they were just supplies. I'm sure there were soldiers also. But there's no doubt that they had their finger on the pulse of the supplies. All supplies would be coming out of Edom. Don't remember where it said, and the river, and where did the water came out of? When the miracle happened, it came out of Edom territory. Why would you want to say that if we know it's coming out of Edom territory? Because they're trying to emphasize that Edom is the key to the supplies and to the miracle, in a sense. So again, this is where the Radak family is coming from. It doesn't fit into the Psukim, but then again, nothing fits into the Psukim.
When they woke up in the morning and they saw the river, and the river was all red.
That's why they thought it was
blank.
But it could be that it was also a reflection.
That's what it was. There was no blood. That's exactly what it was.
It was a reflection.
That always, when I read the story, sometimes people say, that can never happen. But the truth, I always tell this story about it really can't. When you're in war, you're incredible.
Live there.
Yeah, but you know what happens? What happens? I could tell you the story, which I know I've told before, but it's worthwhile. I remember. I'm sorry, we're really over time. I apologize. But I remember that when I was doing a guard sentry in a tank base up in the Golan Heights, and there's a big mountain between me and the country of Syria, and all of a sudden there's this fire above the mountain. There's this glow above the mountain, and I'm doing sentry. And I start to reach for the siren. Now, if I had let that siren go, I would have alerted the entire military command of the Golan Heights. They all would have started to roll towards the Syrian border. But I'm like, I don't know, and there's a fire, and I'm nervous, and I don't know what to do. And all of a sudden, the top of the moon peaks over the mountain. And it was cloudy. It had this cloud. So you had the spread-out effect of this yellow-reddish moon. I tell you, I was...
You thought there was fire?
I thought that there was a bomb going over. I thought people were bombing or there was some kind of thing going over in Syria coming our way. I was so scared. My hand was, it was seconds away from starting a war. Well, we would have started a war. They would have rolled towards it. They would have seen nothing happen. Probably me go to jail is what I would have done.
Yeah, right.
But the fear that you have when you're on sentry duty, the fear that you have in the face of war, it makes you think all kinds of funny things. You see things that you wouldn't know. And I'd say, I would not, if I read this before being in the Army, if I read this, I'm like, well, come on. It's a glow. Who makes that mistake? But when you have the glow of the sun, the radical of the sun, on top of the fact that you are, ready, you're in a state of
a specific direction.
What's that?
And coming from a specific direction of the enemy.
Yeah, correct. You believe all kinds of strange things.
How long were you in the Army?
I did about a year of active service. And then I did MILO in, reserve duty and stuff. What's that?
I was saying, evening sun being red, you can understand. The morning sun is not that.
Yeah, well, keep in mind, it's also picking up, this is Edom, so it's picking up, there's iron probably that's flowing through the rocks and stuff like that. So it's got a real bloody look to it, like Petra. I mean, it's like Petra water, essentially. So I'm sure it was a good, thick red color in the light of the sun, and they freaked out, and they lost. It was only at the end that they turned the battle around. Anyway, have a good night, and...